How did the Lord of the Rings appear from the Witch King's perspective? What did he know, when did he know it, and how did that affect what he did? Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel we cover the Lord of the Rings, A Song of Ice and Fire, and much more. Welcome. One of the most obvious but overlooked aspects of Sauron in The Lord of the Rings is that he largely stays where he is. From the beginning to the end of The Lord of the Rings, Sauron stays in Barad-dûr, which would make for quite a passive villain were it not for the Nazgûl. It is they who pursue Sauron's agenda across Middle-earth, and they who provide the danger and jeopardy in the early part of the story. And even in the second half of the story, the Nazgûl are there in charge of Sauron's army. And the leader of the Nazgûl is the Witch King of Angmar. Although we often just think of him as the leader of the Nazgûl and Sauron's lackey, we should take a moment to be clear that no one did more to prepare the way for Sauron's return at the end of the Third Age than him. Sauron may have been lurking in the background for a few thousand years, but the Witch King destroyed the entire northern kingdom of Arnor, then personally ended the line of kings down in Gondor, led on the rebuilding and refortification of Mordor, and much more. He isn't just a lackey, he's a formidable force in his own right. And just to clarify the relationship between the Witch King and Sauron, the Witch King, like the other Nazgûl, is totally dominated by Sauron, completely in his command. Let's not beat around the bush on this one. But, and this is an important but, despite that control, the Witch King retains his autonomy of action. Sauron does not control him remotely from afar, or is even in constant telepathic communication with him. Simply put, the Witch King is in charge of his own actions. He had been given his orders, and he was striving to carry them out, but throughout the story, he makes his own in-field decisions. Okay, that all said, what was the Witch King up to during that time? What did the War of the Ring look like from his perspective? Well, he starts the story in Mordor. Sauron was obviously desperate to find the ring, and had captured and interrogated Gollum, learning about Shire and Baggins. Not knowing exactly where to start looking for the Shire, Sauron sends his Nazgûl, his most trusted servants, first to very ostentatiously attack Osgiliath, so everyone thought they knew where they were, then in secret to the Anduin River Valley to hunt for the Shire. They went invisible and uncloaked for this. It was only a bit later when they got those black cloaks and became the Black Riders. They didn't find anything in the Anduin Valley. Even the settlement Gollum had grown up in was gone, so Sauron sent orders for them to go to nearby Isengard to question Saruman. The timing here is quite important, because Gandalf had only just escaped Saruman's clutches on the back of Gwaihir when the Black Riders got there, so Saruman took the hit that he looked a bit incompetent as a jailer and admitted that Gandalf had flown off towards Rohan, saying that only he, Gandalf, knew where the Shire was. That, from Saruman's perspective, got the Nazgûl off his back for a little bit. So although it's pretty clear that the Witch King did not really trust Saruman at this point, force was not really an option. Saruman was amassing an army around him. So pragmatism set in, and the Witch King instead led the Black Riders off towards Rohan to hunt for Gandalf. And by chance, en route, they met Grima going the opposite direction. Grima knew he was hugely outnumbered and outpowered, and basically just spilled all the tea. Gandalf had been to Edoras and was now gone. Saruman was a traitor to Sauron, and the Shire was northwest of them, west of Bree. The Witch King spared Grima. We read that the Lord of the Nazgûl spared the life of the Wormtongue, not out of pity, but because he deemed that so great a terror was upon him that he would never dare to speak of their encounter, as proved true, and he saw that the creature was evil and was likely to do great harm yet to Saruman if he lived. So he left him lying on the ground and rode away, and did not trouble to go back to Isengard. Sauron's vengeance could wait. So the Witch King now knew where the Shire was, and also that Gandalf, a significant opponent, was free and able to help and lead the opposition. It took a few days, but the Nazgûl finally reached the border of the Shire, the Sarn Ford. Aragorn had left some rangers there, so it took a little time to cross, but they managed it. At which point, the Witch King divided his forces. He put his second-in-command, Camul the Easterling, in charge of the small team heading into the Shire itself to find Baggins. It was he who confronted Farmer Maggot, Gaffer Gamgee et al., and the Witch King took the rest of the wraiths east to try to cut off any escape route. What followed was a cat-and-mouse game for a few days between Frodo, Gandalf, Aragorn and the Nazgul. Frodo got out of Hobbiton just as Camul got there. He overheard the conversation with Gaffer Gamgee, and the hobbits managed to evade the Black Riders, but only just for the next few days. Then Gandalf appeared on the scene and was less than subtle, charging around on Shadowfax looking for Frodo. The Witch King realised that perhaps he didn't need to find those pesky little sneaky hobbits. He just needed to find Gandalf, and Gandalf would lead him to the Ringbearer. So after hearing about Frodo being in Bree and disappearing mysteriously from the Prancing Pony, the Witch King focused on Gandalf for a bit, trapping him overnight at Weathertop. Gandalf was outnumbered, but still managed to survive the night against the Ringwraiths. When he escaped in the morning, the Witch King sent 4 Nazgul after him, just in case he was going to join up with Frodo elsewhere. He wasn't. Gandalf was actually intentionally drawing away some of the Nazgul. But that's why there were only 5 Nazgul by Weathertop when Aragorn and the hobbits arrived there 3 days later. The 5, including the Witch King, attacked. Frodo held them off for a bit by invoking the name of Elbereth, and Aragorn, heroism personified, beat them back with his flaming brands. However, by that point, the Witch King was actually okay to beat a tactical withdrawal. He had managed to stab Frodo in the shoulder with his Morgul blade, the tip of which broke off, and Frodo was poisoned, and not a normal poison either. Yes, it would leave him in great pain, but the shard itself would work its way towards his heart, and when it reached there, he would turn into a wraith. So this wasn't just a matter of thinking that Frodo would die. Frodo would turn into one of them with the ring, and they would get it that way. They just needed to hang around and be close enough when it happened. Hobbits are small, right, so surely it wouldn't take that long. Of course, hobbits are sturdier than they look, and Aragorn is quite a good healer, so Frodo hung on for longer than expected. Nevertheless, this was touch and go. The Witch King again split his forces. 3 raced ahead to guard the last bridge, the only bridge for miles over the River Horwell, about halfway between Weathertop and Rivendell, but they were seen off by Glorfindel. Now, Glorfindel didn't really feature in the Peter Jackson films, but he is quite a legend. An elf who died killing a Balrog, went to Valinor, and was sent back to help the people of Middle-earth. So on hearing that Glorfindel was now on that bridge, the Witch King did a massive detour to the south and raced back up on the east side of the river to pick up the trail. Eventually, all 9 Ringwraiths were there on horseback, albeit slightly delayed, chasing down Frodo. We know what happened next, of course. Frodo, alone on Asphaloth, just made it to the other side of the Ford of Bruinen, outside Rivendell. He turned and had a moment of defiance, really, holding his sword in the air. The Witch King laughed and magically shattered the sword. Finally, the Witch King must have thought, the moment has come. The enemy that he genuinely feared, or was at least wary of, Glorfindel, was now behind him, as were Aragorn and the other hobbits. Frodo was alone and defenceless just metres ahead of him. So sure of victory was he that he even laughed. But then, as the Black Riders were crossing the ford, Elrond caused the waters of the Bruinen to rise and sweep them all downstream. The first part of the Witch King's involvement in the story, the hunt for the ring, had very, very nearly succeeded a few times, but ultimately it failed. The Witch King himself, once he had escaped the torrent, requisitioned the only horse that survived and charged back to Mordor. The ring was in Rivendell and out of their reach for the time being. He needed new orders from Sauron. When he got to Mordor, he sent horses back for the other Nazgul, and Sauron gave him and his brethren new steeds, the flying fell beasts. They were no longer to be incognito or anonymous Black Riders. Now they would be unleashed in plain sight to strike fear into the opposition, and the Witch King himself was to lead Sauron's army. Sauron gave him, we learn in one of Tolkien's letters later, added demonic force at this point. The Witch King didn't know it, but at the moment he led the army out from Minas Morgul, the ring was actually there, close at hand once more. Frodo and Sam were just outside Mordor and trying to get in as he was heading out. And the Witch King, we are told, paused for a moment, troubled, sensing some other power in his valley. Frodo felt a great urge to put on the ring, presumably coming from the Witch King, but resisted, holding on to the phial of Galadriel and its true, pure light. and the moment passed. The Witch King carried on with his army. The question of why he didn't do more is one that has caused much debate, but the consensus seems to be that Sauron, and by extension the Witch King, were convinced that the ring was at or on its way to Minas Tirith. The idea that someone might try to destroy it had simply never crossed their minds. So the Witch King, probably confident in his powers and having tested the strength of the Ringbearer to not put on the ring if the Ringbearer were there, decided to do what his master commanded, take the army to Minas Tirith. With his army, he took Osgiliath without much resistance, then headed on into the Pelennor Fields. All resistance was just brushed aside. As well as huge superiority in numbers, the army of Mordor had fear on their side. All the Nazgul, but particularly the Witch King, brought with them an aura of fear that made defenders scatter before them. Almost without pausing, they laid siege to Minas Tirith. This wasn't one of those sit-around-outside-and-try-to-starve-them-out kind of sieges. The Witch King was in a hurry. He may not have been able to anticipate Aragorn arriving from the south, having been through the paths of the dead, but he will have been very aware that Saruman falling meant that the Rohirrim would soon be on their way to help Gondor to honour their ancient treaty. He wanted to capture the city before they arrived. Siege weapons were used, and he magically enhanced Grond, that huge battering ram, enabling it to break down the Great Gate. At which point, we get quite an insight into the Witch King's state of mind. He insisted on being the first person in his army to pass through the gateway. Gandalf stood before him, barring the way, and we read this. The Black Rider flung back his hood, and behold, he had a kingly crown, and yet upon no head visible was it set. The red fires shone between it and the mantled shoulders, vast and dark. From a mouth unseen there came a deadly laughter. "Old fool," he said, "old fool, this is my hour. Do you not know death when you see it? Die now and curse in vain." And with that he lifted high his sword, and flames ran down the blade. Given what was to come, this is hubris at its highest. But from his perspective, his confidence is understandable. Minas Tirith was the greatest stronghold humans had, the symbol of defiance against Mordor. The Witch King had personally led a campaign over literally millennia to weaken the kingdom, and now it had fallen. Its steward was mentally broken, one of his sons dead and the other incapacitated in battle. The southern fiefs had been prevented from bringing aid by attacks from Umbar. There was no sight of Theoden and the Rohirrim, and now, with a hugely superior army at his back, he had stepped foot into Minas Tirith as a conqueror. Yes, everything was going to plan. So he laughed in Gandalf's face. Then Rohan came to Gondor's rescue, unexpectedly quickly. This must have felt like an unwelcome distraction at worst, but the Witch King knew he was needed back out on the battlefield, so he got onto his fell beast and tried to take control of the situation. His target was Theoden, king of the Rohirrim. The thinking here seems straightforward enough. Get rid of their leader and the rest will become demoralised quickly enough. This wasn't their homeland they were fighting to defend now, and they will have been tired by the long ride and battle they'd fought just days earlier at Helm's Deep. And to be fair to the Witch King, Theoden was killed while he attacked. Not by him personally, a dart hit his horse, which reared up and fell on him, crushing him. The Witch King landed and, proud as always, advanced to land the killing blow himself. He was opposed by Durnhelm, Eowyn, while Merry crept up behind him with that ancient magical blade, and we know what happened next. Merry stabbed him in the back of the knee, sundering the magic that bound his soul to this plane, and Eowyn drove her sword into him, ending his black reign. I'll do a whole other video on exactly what happened there if you're interested, but here it's worth thinking about the Witch King's perspective on what happened. We noted a moment ago the huge confidence and pride that he was showing at this point, and to be fair, he was always quite a lot like that, but here especially so, and it was still the case when he started to take on Eowyn, who was disguised as a man at the time. It was only when she revealed herself to be a woman that his mood seemed to change. He quoted at her the line that, "No living man may hinder me," and she revealed herself not to be a man, and he became filled with doubt. Tolkien even uses the word doubt twice to describe how he was feeling, just to make sure we understand. The Witch King had been so sure of himself and now suddenly he wasn't. Remember Glorfindel? Centuries earlier, he had prophesied that the Witch King would fall not by the hand of man, and the Witch King took that as a form of prophetic armour. It seems not to have even crossed his mind that he might be struck down by someone who wasn't a man. So the last few seconds of his life, or unlife, were filled with doubt and anger or rage. This is the other way Tolkien describes him at the end. Angry. Gone are the mocking little speeches and cruel laughter. Instead, he's just trying to kill this threat in front of him in the most basic of ways, battering down on her with his mace. This is the last we read, after that final blow. The crown rolled away with a clang. Eowyn fell forward upon her fallen foe. But lo, the mantle and hauberk were empty. Shapeless they lay now on the ground, torn and tumbled. And a cry went up into the shuddering air and faded to a shrill wailing, passing with the wind. A voice bodiless and thin that died and was swallowed up and was never heard again in that age of this world. The Witch King left this world wailing into the wind. I suppose there is an irony here that the dismay he had intended to sow into the hearts of Rohan's army by killing their leader instead happened to his own army with his death. They lost heart and retreated, and ultimately the battle, which had seemed a foregone conclusion in their favour, was lost. Other ironies abound, too, about how he rode out of his way to avoid Glorfindel, and yet Glorfindel's words followed him to his death. How he clung to those words as a defence because no man could kill him, but it turns out that they simply revealed his weakness. But ultimately, Tolkien wants us to see the Witch King as an example of hubris, pride before a fall, and there is a certain poetic justice that for the last moments of his life, that hubris was replaced by doubt. At the end, he realised how wrong he had been. If you'd like to see more videos on the world of J.R.R. Tolkien and the Lord of the Rings, please click on the link to the playlist on the left of your screen. Or if you'd like to support this channel, thank you. There's a link to my Patreon page on the right of your screen. Thanks for watching. That's all for this time. I'll see you again soon.